I think it's communication. I think it's real, actual, human communication. I think it's sitting down and talking to people, communicating to people as people, communicating with people as people. And I really think there's only two ways to do that. I think there's the phone and then there's sitting down like this. I don't think there's, again, I'm the old man here, but zeros and ones are not communication. That's you know, that's a tool that we have to communicate, but it is not communication. You know, a hammer is a tool we use to pound in a nail, but it is not carpentry.
You're listening to the Golden Rules Podcast, where we interview today's top music industry executives and hear how they started, lessons they've learned over their careers, and their golden rules for life and business. I'm your host, Tim Gray, CEO of Grayscale Marketing, an award-winning agency right here in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. This is the music business audio experience. This is the podcast, and these are the golden rules. Welcome to episode 8.
Hello and welcome to the Golden Rules. I'm your host, Tim Gray, and today we are at the beautiful Starstruck Studios, Nashville, Tennessee, on historic Music Row, and Mr. Al McManus is in the house. Thank you, sir, for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it, man.
You got it. It's my pleasure.
Really appreciate it. For you guys that don't know Al, Al is not only a friend, but he gave me the first opportunity to come in and slave labor as an intern here in Nashville.
Yeah.
And outside of pimping out my work ethic, he's also a 22-year music veteran.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked practically every position you can imagine in the industry and mastered them to a point where it's been at record labels, it's been tour management, artist management, entrepreneurship. During his two-decade-long tenured career, he's overseen and worked directly with artists that have sold over 46 million records combined. That's just what I could find online, by the way.
I sound important.
53 number one hits, and together they've won, excuse me, practically every award you can imagine, from CMA, ACMs, CSAC, BMI, Americana, Grammy Awards, and even worked directly with a Country Music Hall of Fame inductee.
Mm-hmm.
He's now currently the Director of Operations for Aspire Entertainment, which puts on mega music festival at sea, music festival cruises, Shiprock Cruise, working with artists such as Korn. He's currently the Director of Operations working with Aspire Entertainment that oversees giant music festivals at sea, working with artists like Five Finger Death Punch and Korn. He is a husband, father, entrepreneur, friend, mentor, and one hell of a guitar player. He's also, and one of the key reasons other than I love him and respect him so much that I wanted to bring him in, he is absolutely one of the best I've ever seen at person-to-person relationships. And I'm really excited to have him on board today. You guys should learn a lot. It's going to be a damn good time.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Appreciate it, brother.
That's making me sound like I've done something. That's good.
You have.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. Well, I know all the stuff we bullshitted about over the years and all the rando stuff. I don't actually know, other than what you and Jeff have shared, like the origin story.
Sure.
Like if you were an X-Man movie.
Sure.
Like, where is home? Where'd you come from?
Sure.
I have a general vague memory, but I don't really remember.
Sure. I grew up in Western New York, which is different than what people say is upstate New York. You know, they say upstate New York, and that basically means anything. If you're living in Manhattan or live in New York City, that basically means everything other than New York City, right? But it's really not. You know, New York State, I'm from Western New York, which is a lot different than upstate New York, in my view. Basically, Buffalo, New York. My mother grew up in Buffalo, New York. My father grew up in a little town called Hornell, New York, which is where I was born and raised. And I moved to Nashville in 1996 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I'll skip ahead to the good parts. I went to college. After high school, I kind of, well, let me get it right here. After high school, which wasn't pleasant for me, after high school, I moved in central New York and moved there with my sister and played in bands and just tried to do the thing as kind of a recording artist, guitar player kind of thing. And farted around with that for probably 4 years or so. And then I moved to Manhattan at some point during there, maybe, I don't even know what year that would be, 94, before. And the big city was just not my thing. I was just so overwhelmed. I grew up where there was more cows than people, and moving into Manhattan from that environment was just too much to handle for me at one time. Maybe I wasn't mature enough or ready enough to do that. So I called my parents and I said, "Can I move back home with you?" And my dad said, "Why?" And I said, "I want to go to college." And that pause was for dramatic effect, because I didn't really want to go to college necessarily. But I did. I moved back in with my parents and tucked my tail between my legs. And it's just all part of who you are and what you wind up becoming, you know. And, you know, taking my lumps. And I went to school at Alfred State College and I studied court reporting, which I don't know why I did that.
That's random as hell.
Yeah, stenography. Yeah. And I did that for about a year and a half. And I came to Nashville for spring break. And that was like March of 96. I had a good friend who you mentioned, Jeff Lecision, who was in town working at Warner Brothers Records. And I came into town for spring break to visit him. And I met about 10 people that became lifelong friends, and I still have friends now. And I went back to college and I just looked around and I said, "What the hell am I doing here? This is not where I'm supposed to be." So I basically quit college and worked really hard to save a bunch of money, planning on moving to Nashville. And then I got lucky to a certain extent. But luck is a weird thing, right?
Yeah.
You kind of make your own. I got a phone call from Jeff saying, "Hey, there's a position open in the mailroom at Warner Brothers." He's like, "I don't know what's going to happen, but I can get you an interview." So, at that time, the beginning of June of 96, I think it was 96. I always confuse this. It may have been 97. I drove down to Nashville. I interviewed for this job. I knew nothing about the music industry whatsoever. And I somehow talked my way into this job in the mailroom. And got hired on a Friday, drove back to New York State 12 hours, loaded up my car with anything that would fit in my car, and drove back to Nashville and started on a Monday. And I spent about a year in the mailroom there, and that was a great experience for me. I learned how to hustle, you know, and that was kind of, if you want to just skip to the end of this interview, that's where it is for me, is the hustle and being accountable and being present. And I was accountable and present and worked really hard in the mailroom. And at that time, the mailroom was hopping, man. It was right at the beginning of digital. And the mailroom was a hopping place to be, man. It was,
you're
hustling.
Mail.
Yeah. Doing actual mail and mailings and, you know, dropping 1500 FedEx envelopes together and putting CDs in them and personalized letters. And I felt that relationship from the radio promotion team. It was your kind of extension of the radio promotion team. You know, they'd call down to the mailroom and say, "Hey, you know, WIVK, Knoxville needs this thing overnighted." You know, and you felt like you were helping. You know, you're sending the new Travis Tritt single to the program director, you know, and you're part of the process. And it was really exciting being part of that team, even on a small level like that. So when you get in those jobs and you have those opportunities, you just make the most of them, you know, and you hustle and you work as hard as you can. And you don't worry about what the hours you're putting in. You don't worry about how early or how late. You just do the job, you know. So from there, I got introduced to an artist manager in Nashville, and I'm just completely skipping ahead.
No.
Am I okay?
No, go far away, dude.
You haven't even asked me to talk.
I'll pick him up.
And I got introduced to an artist manager in town and started working for him as his assistant, and that was a company called Gold Mountain Entertainment. And after about 6 months of being his assistant, I kind of moved into the day-to-day realm of artist management, which if y'all aren't familiar with what day-to-day is, it's basically the manager. You know, it's all the minute details of the artist's career and artist's life. And usually the manager should be overseeing the kind of the larger picture things, the bigger picture relationships. And in the meantime, the day-to-day manager is really the one, you know, communicating with the artist the most, I feel like, and really digging into what their artistry is all about. You know, from scheduling photo shoots and making sure band guys show up and rehearsals and budgets and recording budgets and everything from, you know, hustling around and picking up their dog from doggy daycare, whatever it may be. That's, you know, that's a big part of management, and the day-to-day management is kind of that world that I jumped into. And to this day, as of February 2018, I'm still an artist manager. In the past 4 or 5 years, I've kind of let a little bit of that part of my business go in favor of the festival from the promoter side of things. Mm-hmm. But to back up a little bit, while I was at Gold Mountain, I think it was 90, maybe it was 99 or so, I had been doing day-to-day management for Ronnie Millsap, who's a country music artist and now a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame. And his tour manager wasn't working out with him and his tour manager. And I had been doing a lot of those duties in the office and not going on the road, but I was taking care of a lot of those tour management duties in addition to the day-to-day duties. And he called me and said, baby, why don't you just go ahead and come on the road with me, baby? Would you mind doing that? And I said, man, I'd be honored to do that. So for the next 5 years, I served as his tour manager and day-to-day manager in the office. So it was a lot of work. You know, the summertime, there weren't many really days off. It was, you know, Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday in the office, and then Thursday night was bus call. And, you know, in the country music industry, for the most part, with some exceptions, it's a weekend warrior thing. So you're hopping on the bus on Thursday night and work until Sunday afternoon or maybe Monday morning, and then I'm right back in the office. So summer times were lengthy and productive and busy. But you know, you're young and you just do, and it was exciting. It was great to have, you know, I was doing that work from the office, and I was just kind of handing a folder to the tour manager saying, "Here's your tour. Have fun," right? So when I had the opportunity to go on the road and actually execute those things that you put together, and you know, I'd been talking, advancing a show for 6 weeks with a promoter, and then somebody else would go meet them, and that was kind of disappointing. So when I had the opportunity to do that, I jumped on it, and that was great. I mean, that is the road. If you want to talk about the music industry and you want to talk about artistry, artists, they're, for the most part, in my opinion, artists, the real artistry happens on the stage. That's when they get to connect. That's when they get to do what they do. They want to play. You know, a lot of artists just want to be in the studio and sing and play in the studio. That's fine. But for the most part, artists want to go on the road and they want to play their music in front of people. And so when you're a tour manager, you really get to know not even necessarily the larger part of the music industry per se, but you learn about artistry real quick. And what the artist expects on the road and a lot of the production stuff and a lot of how the nuances of the band and how a great artist, a Country Music Hall of Famer, how he puts on a show. And the show is the middle, you know, sorry, the beginning, the middle, and the end, and it has this ebb and flow. And here's this guy who had 40 number one hits who I'm watching his show on a nightly basis, you know, for years and years and years, and you really figure out, boy, this is a show. It's put together, and it would change and tweak, but he knew how to draw the audience in. He knew how to engage with them during the songs. He knew how to speak to them. He knew how to handle hecklers and in weird situations and how to handle poor production on a certain night if there's feedback. And how do you get through that in big events where there's 30,000 people watching or big TV events when there's a nationwide audience? And how do you handle those stressful moments and leading up to that, and what do you do to prepare for those things, and what do you do when you're not prepared, and how to fake it? You know, he was great at faking it. I remember there's a story where he got honored with the ACM Pioneer Award, and he's blind, and he took some notes with his Braille recorder and brailled it out and printed them out and had them in his pocket. So he knew exactly who to thank, because he couldn't read a teleprompter, right? Sure. He couldn't read his handwritten notes. That would be awkward on TV, right? So he's had one hand in his pocket, and he's running through, feeling his notes and saying, hey, special thanks to so-and-so and so-and-so here. And so, I mean, that's just a trick. Now, not everybody can utilize that trick. A blind person could.
Sure.
But there's those kind of things where you're like, how can I kind of cheat the system? And that comes from, you know, his years of experience and super talented guy. Probably the most talented guy I've ever been around.
I watched a video last night, and he was certainly upwards of age. Mm-hmm. And even his voice then was impeccable.
Sure.
Yeah. Just good Lord.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think they had tracks on television then.
No, it sure sounded like one, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. I was like, fuck.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. That guy.
Really, really.
And I love to still be able to call him a friend today. So I'm still an artist manager today. But like I said, I've kind of fallen in favor of most of my work now is I still do manage a country music singer and a member of the Grand Ole Opry named Joe Diffie. 10 years strong in that relationship. And Joe and I are not only, I think, good friends, but I'm really proud of the work that myself and Jeff have been able to do for him for these past 10 years. I spent a lot of my time early in artist management, developing acts and trying to get young artists record deals and that kind of thing. As you know, lots and lots of time goes into that. Lots and lots of effort goes into that. And sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. For me, it did pay off on a few times. That was, you know, the end result may not have been the same as far as them wind up playing arenas and being megastars, but what I was able to put in my knowledge base and my holster from those experiences and how to read and react and deal with artists and people and A&R guys and record labels and publishers is just completely invaluable. So there's a certain part of all this knowledge right now that I feel like I have, a little bit of it's going to waste because now I'm on the promoter side for the most part, right? And all those, the record label is kind of, it's not insignificant, but it certainly isn't as important as the pure artist management.
Sure.
My world now is very much involved in event planning, you know, event planning and promoting the event. There's the promoter side, there's the event planning part component of what I do, and managing people. There's a lot of people management that I do now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got staff for our events that, you know, there's upwards of 20 or so volunteers, staff members that you're trying to put in place to make the event successful. So,
and it's a floating city.
It's a floating city.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
It blows my mind.
Anything you need, and you've participated in one or two.
I did not bring the right shoes.
Yeah. Proper footwear is important.
Large amount of walking. I was really unprepared.
Oh, yeah. 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 I before we sail on our events, I go out and walk at least 45 minutes a night. For the last month going into it, just because if you don't, you're going to get on board and your back and your feet and your...
Oh, I felt it.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
It's miraculous that how the whole process works to get all the production, all the humans, all the food, everything on mm-hmm. there, and then off again as rapidly
sure.
as it takes. It
sure.
really is mind-blowing.
And the great thing is a lot of that, the functions are pretty firm. There's the kind of the nautical function of the ship, and then there's the hotel function of the ship, and there's a hotel director, and there's the captain of the ship. So the captain of the ship handles the maneuvering of the ship and the itineraries and making sure everybody's safe. And he has his crew of 1,000 people under him. And then there's the hotel director who handles the hotel part of it, the food and beverage, the housekeeping, the guest services, that whole thing. So there's those two components. And then our world, which is the promoter side and the event side, has to kind of plug into that little thing and become the kind of the triumvirate of putting on the event. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. And it all goes, I mean, I'm sitting here in this chair, but it's not me. It's surrounding yourself with the right people and making good choices on who you bring on to help you. You know, there's, like I said, there's six people at our company now, and they're all exceptional people. I mean, they could be sitting here just as easily as I could.
Sure.
Who do a ton of the work, and then, you know, I get to sit up there as the director of operations and, you know, and sit here with
sure.
you. But there's a lot of people it takes to put those things on and to make it successful.
Now, all the things that you've touched, from being on stage to coming out on the road with baby bands and touring with superstar legends, the day-to-day, the artist management, all of it, when did it get to a place where you were like, I can do this? Like when, like throughout the hustle, when did it become mm-hmm. clear? Like, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I left Gold Mountain and I'll mention that I left Gold Mountain in 2007 or 2008. My timeline might be a little bit weird because I'm always looking forward. when I left that company, I thought I had it figured out. You know, I had a couple of artists that were pulling me to be their manager, and I thought, you know what, I can do this. You know, I'm looking at a boss or a colleague and going, I'm kicking ass, I'm better, you know.
Sure.
And in the first, and so I left my company and made and bet on myself and took a leap of faith. And luckily I had a business partner and a good friend that kind of jumped with me, you know. So that, I think that really helped me in kind of conquering your fear, knowing that somebody had your back. But really the question being, when did I know, is the day I thought I knew, you know. And you think you have it. And you're still nervous, and you're excited, and you think you've got it under control, but you really don't. I mean, let me tell you, these guys sitting running all these companies around here, they're shitting their pants just like everybody else. Now, they're confident and knowledgeable, but there's decisions that they make that they go, I don't know how this is going to work out. And they go home and go, whew, I hope this works out. And when it works out, they go, yeah, I made that plan. I made that decision. Yeah. When it doesn't work out, they get fired. You know, and then they go and hopefully they can find another job. But there's it's a matter of confidence and some self-awareness and trusting yourself, trusting the process, believing in yourself. I wake up every day in what I do and look forward to learning something. You know, I think if you wake up every morning thinking you know everything, is the moment you should just quit or just, you know, realize that you're an asshole. And understanding that, you know, the people that, luckily for me, the people that I've been lucky enough to be surrounded with, and a guy, Alan Koenig, who took a chance on me, I'm lucky enough to, not lucky enough, I have to work on listening and listening to those people when they talk and when they tell you something that's important to them, and making sure that if it's a good idea, rolling it into what you're doing and being flexible and malleable. But as far as when I thought I had it, the moment I left Cold Mountain and started my own firm. But shortly thereafter, you realize you didn't, you know, and you look back and go, wow, my old boss really, he's better than I thought, you know. He was good at this too. And granted, he had 20 plus years experience on me. And it's not a competition. It's just everybody's got their own thing. But I still don't feel like I have it figured out. I've discovered that the older I get, I'm kind of like my old man. How I view my old man, the older I get, the smarter he gets. Right. And I'm starting to feel that about myself a little bit, where I see, you know, you'll be working with a record company and the A&R guy's 26. You know, it's like, boy, I didn't know shit when I was 26. And you kind of don't know shit either. But, you know, you might be more plugged in at this and this and this. And that's where, no matter what happens, you got to keep your ears and eyes open to younger folks and older folks. And for me, especially people who are older than me, have more experience than me. Because there's so much to learn from everybody, man. Just keeping your eyes open and your ears open, and trying to pay attention to people. But yeah, I realized I could do it at that time, but I certainly haven't figured it out.
Oh no, that's always so interesting to me, is when you get that first glimpse, that indicator that you're on the right track, and you feel filled with confidence, and you're like, oh yeah, I don't have to go, you know, do this other thing. I can do this.
Right.
That excitement feeling feels a lot.
That's right.
Also, through that feeling of figuring it out that I can do this, or at least feeling that you can, also become, you get this shadow, you know, this fear, this this self-doubt that I think working in the industry, a lot of people have felt. And I know I've certainly gone down my fair share of shame spirals where I was like, maybe this isn't. Maybe I should go do something else. Was there ever a point in yours where you're like, fuck it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to sell sweaters.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, and I hope, I don't know if a lot of people have gone through that or not. I mean, you know, you think about the industry and the people that are successful, whether they're artists or managers, producers, label people, whatever. And you look at them and you think, there's no way they had that doubt, right? But I think having the doubt makes you stronger. And I think it, you know, it forces you to push through. But sure, I've had those doubts. When I transitioned from management to the promoter side of things with the cruises, there was definitely a time. You know, I had a couple baby acts that I was working with that I had gotten signed to record deals, and those things, those relationships fell apart, and there was a lot of dishonesty and running around, and these, you know, it became this dramatic thing where you're going, man, I busted my tail for you for 3.5 years. And now I'm getting fired, you know, and you just, so you have, and it's not the doubt necessarily about what you can do or the fact that you're capable of doing, because you just did it. So, you know, but it's that thing, it's the personalities and this business, and I think all businesses, if you're passionate about it, it is personal. I mean, you know, you got, people try to separate, but there's really no separation, because when you're in it and you believe in it, and you're working really hard at it, it becomes very, very personal. It does for me.
Absolutely.
So there's been times where you're going, what else can I do? Matter of fact, I've made phone calls with friends going, hey man, You work in fiber optics? What's that? You know, that sounds fancy. Can I sell some of that? Or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you kind of go, you realize that you don't really have any marketable skills other than bullshitting with people and being organized. So you just kind of, you fall back. And then, you know, you keep plugging away and something clicks, something happens.
Sure.
You know, it's like you're not going to even get a base hit or let alone a home run if you're not at the plate.
I just love, and I'm always so curious to see the overcoming of the doubt, to go back to mm-hmm. that place of want, to go, I know the path. I was already walking the path. This is right. just a little
right.
negative voice in my ear. And the ones that end up doing incredibly well are the ones that can get past that,
sure.
that little hurdle there. If you could go back to young Al, you've moved here, you've left, you moved into management world, and somebody could sit you down and say, drop some knowledge. What three things do you wish someone would have told you before you started your career?
I'm glad we're recording this because I'm going to think about this for a second. There might be a long, dramatic, awkward pause.
No problem.
If I could have somebody drop some knowledge on me, It's a double-edged sword. Here's why. I don't know if, how old was I again? 25, say?
Mm-hmm.
25?
Yeah, when you first moved into management.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that would be a little later for me then. Whatever it was, whatever the, for sure. whoever's watching, whatever you get to that thing where, say, you graduate from college and you start your first job.
Yeah.
How about that, right?
That works.
The problem with that is the double-edged sword to me is that I don't know if I would listen. Right?
Sure.
Because there's part of being 25, and I sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but there's part of being 25 where you're either consumed with yourself or whatever you got going on or what you think is right, and the old me wouldn't have listened. And I go back to my old man. It's like, well, Dad, why didn't we talk about finances? Why did I finance this car? I barely had a job, and I got this loan for this car, and I'm saddled with this car for 4 years, this payment. Why did I do that? Why didn't you tell me not to do that? And my old man said, you wouldn't have listened. Yeah. And I thought, you're a son of a bitch. Because I wanted that thing, and I'm focused on that one thing. I'm not going to, you know, some people, okay, then let's flip the script a little bit. If if someone was willing to listen at that point in their life,
mm-hmm.
I would tell them, the most important things. There's a lot I would tell them. I would say the most important thing is be patient. You know, 25, I mean, I spent more time at that management office at Gold Mountain, you know, playing solitaire, right? I mean, you look back and go, how much time did I burn playing solitaire, right? Just because you're sure. you're hungover or you're whatever, and you're just, you know, and there's not much to do. In that job, you're not having to create. You're playing defense a lot of times. You're not really needing to be proactive. But there was a lot of time that was burnt. Just be patient, you know. Don't think that you're going to change it right away. Don't think you're going to change it in 5 years. Because oftentimes, you don't quite know enough to get things done, really. And that comes with patience and being aware and being present. And so I think be patient is the first thing. And I would not have listened. But if I would have listened, I would have taken that advice. The other thing is show up. You got to show up. Go do the stuff. Go show up. And when there's an opportunity that's something cool that somebody says, hey, man, we should do, just go. Just go because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, and the other thing is give a shit. You know, if you go to those things if you're patient and you show up and you give a shit, that's really where it starts to flip. If you really, you show up and you care, you know, you go to a, you know, your neighbor says, hey, can you help me with my Boy Scout troop? We gotta set up a little sound system over here. Yeah, I'll help you. You go and you show up and you give a shit. And you care that the details are taken care of. You care that the microphone's set up a certain way. You ask somebody, hey, how does the show go? What are we doing? Are the Boy Scouts getting their awards first? Or are they getting it after? And should we have some background music in between? Care. Just care. Show up and give a shit. And when that happens, people will take notice of that. They'll look at that and go, oh, he's sharp. He didn't do anything. He had put background music on for the Boy Scout show or whatever the hell it is,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
And you cared enough. And try to find that thing. And luckily for me, luck, again, not really luck, but for I've been fortunate enough to fall into stuff that I love, right? The music side of things. I love to play music. I listen to music. It's just kind of who I am. And my job doesn't feel like a job. It's not a job. It's just who I am, what I do. And those are the people that are my friends that I work with. But sure, we throw a couple parties a year, you know, and that's fun and it's super rewarding. But you know, it started for me as a volunteer. I was invited to go out on these cruise ships. Hey, come help me with this. Right. And that's where, believe it or not, I'm going somewhere with that. You know, I showed up, hey, show up to this. And I'm going to go volunteer. What do you want? What am I doing? He's like, oh, I just need you to check the artists in, you know, like tour manager stuff. Oh, okay. Yeah, I do that anyway. So I showed up. And then when I got there, I gave a shit. I started looking around going, you know, okay, Korn's here. I know that band. They're cool. I want to take care of them because I'm an artist manager and I'm a tour manager. So let me take care of them and do those things that I know what to do to make sure that they're comfortable and they're checked into the boat, right? So I showed up, one, said yes, and then I showed, and then I gave a shit. It's like, I want to make this right, you know? Let's get the line over here. The gear goes here. They show up here. Okay, how is this most effective? How are we going to cut the line to get these bands in first? And, you know, you start to care and express opinions, and when you care and you have opinions and you have some knowledge, people start listening. And they start paying attention, and then people see the value in you. And then you volunteer for a couple years, and after those couple years, the guy comes back and goes, I want to hire you. And all of a sudden, you get hired, and then all of a sudden, you're running the company. You know, just because you showed up, sure, and you cared. You know, and hopefully, if you show up and you care, you know, it's hard to show up at something that you don't like, right? Hey, let's go pick raspberries. And you go, okay, right. Yeah, I'm not into picking raspberries. They're delicious and they're good for you.
That's true.
But I don't care about that. It's not my passion. So put yourself in the vicinity of your passion. Show up to those things that sound cool. And when you show up, go over and above and do those things that aren't necessarily required and hustle and just say yes. And, you know, like I said, luckily for me, I'm in a business where it's like, I love it, man. It's like throwing a party's fun. And having artists around and music and stages and lights and show and smoke machines. And I ran around three years ago. Oh, it was 2015. I ran around trying to find a portable inhaler for one of the artists on who he had on the ship. You know, these little cans. They look like those things.
Yeah.
You like that? They look like those things, but it's air and you suck them in, right? And I went out and I had to find those things at the last minute. I found five of them. And I showed up and I gave them to the tour manager of this band. He's like, oh, cool, man. We don't really need these anymore. You're like, oh. But you showed up and you gave a crap and you delivered what you're supposed to deliver, whether they needed it or not.
Sure.
And that you proved your value. And so, yeah, man, it's just a matter of, like I said, being patient, show up, and give a shit, you know?
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's damn good advice, sir.
Yeah.
When I'm looking back over just a handful of years I've been here in Nashville, I've had a lot of people that have planted little seeds for me to push me onto the next thing. Mm-hmm. Or when I've had those self-doubt moments, or even when I was entirely too full of myself, check my ass a little mm-hmm. bit.
Sure.
You were one, Jeff definitely one, and a handful of others. Who are those people in your life over your career that
sure.
have been mentors and pivotal teachers for you?
Yeah, a couple great ones, man, really. A couple three great ones. A couple guys that really gave me my first chance when I started my own management firm. One was Tony Conway, the man, the
yeah.
icon, you know. I mean, you know, he helped me. He helped me in so many ways. And Tony's got an interesting style, man. Tony, you'll sit in a meeting with Tony like this, or, you know, not a meeting,
yeah.
not like this, but you'll sit in a meeting with artists and Tony and maybe a publicist or something, and Tony will just nod. And then he doesn't say anything. And then when he does, people go, oh, shit, Tony's saying something. It may not even be important or good, but the fact that he holds back shows A, that he's listening, and B, he's not talking shit. He's not trying to fill space with sound, right? And listening is probably the most important thing. And Tony's a great listener, man, and super patient guy. And I feel like, you know, he grew up in it, but it's also just kind of in his blood. It's kind of one of those guys. So mad respect for Tony, and he helped me get one of my first clients. He recommended me to this artist, and I wound up working with that artist for a long time, and still have a good friendship with that artist. Tony was great. And he, you know, obviously he ran Buddy Lee Attractions for all those years. He has his own management company now. Mm-hmm. And then, another agent named Darren Murphy, who's at CAA, also kind of the same thing. I signed an artist and he was the artist's, booking agent, and Darren was great. You know, I was way out of my league at that time with this artist and with Darren. Darren was booking huge acts for huge money, but he always took the time. And I felt like I bullshitted my way through that pretty well, you know, trying to convince him that I knew more than I did. But again, I showed up and I was accountable and I gave a shit. So when he sent me an email, I would read it and I would consume it and think about my response. And he kind of helped me with that a lot too. And then another agent friend, David Kiswini, who's a great guy. I think he's still at Buddy Lee. Mm-hmm. Just as a pal, as a friend, you know, just encouraging and, you know, we'll say those right words at the right time. Hey, man, don't worry about it. This happens. It's all, you know, it happens, man. And these guys have been doing it for 50 years. And you're like, sure. Hey, it happens. And when they say it happens, you're like, okay, so I'm not the first idiot to make this mistake, because you never are. You know, and mistakes are what are the foundation of what you build yourself on, whether your professional career or your personal life. So there's probably more. Alan Koenig, obviously one who I work for now, and help him run his company. He's been great, tireless guy, man. Just focused, laser focused, committed to what he's created, and he's kind of given me the keys to that car, which is super, like, you know, super flattering and humbling. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think I've ever been asked that question before about who in the industry has helped. Man, there's a lot of them, a lot of great people over the years.
I've had some that when I sit down and I ask myself all these questions first to see, you know, how easy and or difficult it would to answer them. And when I actually got to this, I was able to fill an entire page with people that had impacted me, mm-hmm. but maybe I hadn't shown enough appreciation to that.
Yeah, I think you're showing off. I think you're just trying to one up me because I only came up with three.
No, it would tell you what.
I just can't, you know.
That one told me something that he saved my ass when I was really feeling bad and I was going through it. And he goes, how many artists have you managed? I told him, he goes, how many times have you been fired? He's like, you're not even a real manager until you get fired 12 times.
That's right, 12. It's like a good songwriter. Yeah, the songwriter. It's like, yeah, I've written this song. Like, how many songs you wrote? It's probably 200. And the guy goes, yeah, when you write 3,000, then you may write a good one. Yep. You know, that kind of thing. It's the same thing.
I was like, oh, well, fuck, mine don't even count. I'm not even a real manager yet.
Yeah.
I got to get fired more faster.
Right. Which is easy to do.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, sometimes you can't get fired as fast as you even want to on some projects. But, no, you know, the more I think about it, too, another one of the guys that really helped me, because I know how you cut these things together, so I'm going to rephrase the question. But another guy who helped me out a lot was a guy named Van Fletcher, who worked. I met him at Virgin when he was running Virgin Records here in town, and he went on to work at E1, and he's just always been great. Just a hippie guy who loves music first, and the business is kind of secondary. But the business follows his passion for music. You know, he shows up, he gives a shit. You know, it's not for him. It's not always about the I's and T's and corporate kind of thing. It's just going with your gut and making people feel good about music. And I kind of hopefully learned a little bit of that from him.
He is a super nice dude.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get him to come on. We're just figuring out days.
Yeah,
I'm so curious to hear his backstory.
Yeah, he'd be a great one. Yeah. He'd be a great one. Great dude. But there are a lot. There's a bunch of guys. You know, Bobby Roberts was one. Just kind of has been there, done everything. I think Bobby Roberts' company has merged into a couple other ones over the years. Mm-hmm. But Bobby's great. You know, certainly there's, you know, and there's really a lot, of tour managers over the years that I met on the road. And, you know, those are your, what do they call them? Your peers, but your, your compatriots or whatever the word is.
Colleagues.
You're going, you know, I'm a tour manager, you're a tour manager, we're on the road, we're at this festival together. Les Martinez. Now, that's a guy you should probably try to get. That guy's amazing. He's Neil McCoy's tour manager. He's been Neil's tour manager forever. And he's just a, you want to talk about, you know, Neil's played a lot of big shows, and Neil's got a great organization. And Les just never really feels the pressure, or he doesn't show it. You know, you just never know. And he's so prepared, and he knows all the answers because he's been around for so long. But Les is a great road guy. Yeah, man, some of the road guys, the longtime tour managers, are really interesting people. And they, like I said, they really know artistry. If they've been in those positions for a long time, that's really where, to me, that's where the music business is. Is the music business, to me, is the stage. And it should almost start there. Oftentimes it doesn't. Sometimes it does. It starts with an artist that tours and just goes out and does the thing. Zach Brown, just first example I could think of. Mm-hmm. You know, it started with the stage. It started with playing. Then all of a sudden it becomes a business rather than, you know, an artist that's going to be signed to record label one. Oh, X over here who, you know, has played a few rounds at the Bluebird.
Sure.
And there's nothing wrong with that because they can grow into that too, and it's happened a million times. But, you know, for me, the ones that start as performers and own the stage first, those are ones that I love the business side of, you know.
Yeah.
Because the stage is really, you know, the music business was created because of the stage. You know, somebody saw an artist on the stage and wanted to say, oh, man, we should make everybody hear this. And put it on the radio. Send them on tour. I mean, that started from an artist on a stage on a gazebo somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I should know the answer to how the music industry started.
I don't know it either.
I mean, you would think, right? Hopefully we're smart
enough.
There's a
book right there. Everything we need to know about the music business.
David Passman, right? Or Donald or David? David
Donald.
Donald Passman. Yeah. Read it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I know as much as you love music and as much as you play music, what's your favorite part of the business? Is it the human element? Is it the music element? Is it the live element? Is it kind of the grind of doing it all when it's all jumbled together?
Sure.
Like, what's your favorite thing?
My favorite part about it is is getting done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the afterglow. That's my favorite part. You know, specifically with, you know, there's been a couple things, a couple weird situations I've been in. I'll name two of them. I'll tell two quick little stories. One of which was I was not the tour manager for an artist I was managing, and he had some problems getting paid at a venue, and it was just kind of a mud bog. It was out in the middle of, actually it was in Tennessee, but it was in the hills. You know, it was out there, and I was just there as a manager. I just showed up a couple hours before the gig, went on the bus, had a couple drinks, and, you know, just the support of the artist and just kind of getting the overall vibe of how the crew's doing, how the band's doing. And that's important for a manager to go out there and see what's happening, because, again, the real business is the artist, and the artist's real business is the show, right? Mm-hmm. So I was out there, and the tour manager was having a heck of a time trying to get the back half of the payment, right? So we get creative somehow, and I grabbed the iPad, and I went to the promoter, and he's like, man, I really, you know, he's hemming and hawing, whatever excuses. I said, hey, man, you got a credit card? He said, yeah. I said, you do. I said, all right, what's the limit? He told me the limit. I said, oh, that'll work. So I grabbed the iPad for merch, and I said, come on, man, let's go. And there was no cell service. So I got in the car with this guy, and I had the iPad on my lap, and we're driving around. I'm waiting for the, you know, it's a cellular iPad. I'm waiting for the cell service to come up, and we're driving along, and I'm like, so just shooting the bull about this guy, and he's making all these excuses about why he can't pay, and I get it. It's hard. It's a hard, the promoter, and I live it. The promoter can be a hard job. So I'm driving the hills aimlessly in Tennessee, and finally that iPad went boop, and I saw the cell service come up, and I said, let me see that credit card. So I queued it up and swiped it for the balance, and it was a big number, and I'm waiting in the circle. It's going like this, and then, approved, and I say, hey, sign this, and he signed it. But then, and I got back to the gig, and I'm like, man, the tour manager was dead in the water. He didn't know what to do.
Sure.
And I was like, that was pretty cool. That was just years of experience. I mean, it's not brain surgery, right? It's not like, oh, revolutionary idea of how to take a payment.
Sure.
But it was that on the moment where I was able to grab all the experiences I had before, and I just pulled it out, and luckily the artist got paid, you know. Right. And this is, by the way, this is after the show, so the tour manager made a mistake there too. So luckily we were able to get paid. So that was, and that's what I said about it's done.
I remember you told me that that's an important lesson.
Yeah.
Well, you told me the first three rules.
The first three rules
that's right.
of artist management. The first rule is get the money, and then the second one is get the money, and the third one's get the money. So they're very three, very distinct, unique yeah. rules.
You can't forget the second one.
No, the second one, they all roll together,
yep.
right? But that's just in that, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back, but I was proud that I was able to get that done. This was years ago. But it was I was proud to get that done. So really it's like what's the best part about it is looking back and going, we did that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love the process of getting those things done as much as actually getting them done, because I just get blind. When I get so busy, when our events are coming up, I get so busy that my wife is like, bye, I'll see you in 2 months, right? Because literally I just get blind and I'm so focused, hyper-focused on it. And then when it's done, there's this huge sense of relief. And then there's also a true sense of emptiness, which interestingly, if we're being honest, I'm going through a little bit right now.
Yeah, you guys just came back.
We just came back from two cruise events, and it's so overwhelmingly busy, and right now is the downtime, and I have a hard time adjusting to that. So sure. I try to go for bike rides with my kids, you know.
And they're growing like weeds.
Holy yeah, exactly. Crap. Exactly. Nuts. So the favorite part is I do love the grind of getting those things done and the stress that you put on yourself trying to do the best you can. But I do love I love when it's over and you can look back on it, even if it's not success, even if it's not successful, or even if you failed along the way, getting over and being able to dissect it afterwards is probably my favorite part, because that's the part that really helps you get better the next time.
Sure. Well, you'd said something earlier that it keeps coming up with each person I've interviewed, and I'm a big believer in it, and I think I may have always known the answer, but I didn't actually do anything about it. And you talked about knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. How important do you think it is for anybody in the industry, much less your position, to really know yourself and to know what your strengths are?
Boy, man, that's a good question. Because I think knowing your strengths are probably more important than knowing yourself. Because knowing yourself, man, that's a whole other interview. Right, that's a whole other, like, that's an interview you have with your psychiatrist.
You know? Sometimes,
yeah. You know, and I'm honestly, I hate when people say honestly, because then it sounds like I haven't been telling the truth. Yeah. This time I'm telling the truth. Honestly, to tell you the truth, it's like, wait a second, were you lying before? But no, for me, I don't even know who I am, man. One day I looked in the mirror and I had a long beard and I was like, wow, I didn't even know I had a beard. Really. Somebody in the store was like, hey, nice beard. And I didn't, I said, oh, okay. And I got home and I looked at my beard and it was as if I hadn't looked in the mirror for months.
Sure.
Really. So I'm not really a super introspective, who am I, what's my purpose kind of guy. There's a lot of just gut feeling and just going from moment to moment. My wife is really good at looking at the future. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's not necessarily about knowing who you are as a person, but knowing your strengths and knowing your strengths is really important. And for me, you know, it's communication. I feel like my strengths are communication. Follow up, man. Follow up and follow through. Keeping notes. Like, you know, I'm all hip to technology, man, but I got a notepad. I've had a notepad for 25 years. And people who don't have a notepad, they don't follow up as well as people with notepads. Just saying.
I'm a line checker. I need to strike
through. That's right. I'm a strike through guy, yep. man. And I get I get technology. I use technology on a daily basis. I'm hip to all of it. Better at some than others, some applications and so forth. But, you know, I work with a lot of people who say, yep, I got it. And you go, do you? Because you didn't have it last time. You know, and why don't you have it? Because you forget, or you just don't want to. So I feel like, you know, my strengths are being able to sit down and bullshit with somebody and have, you know, understanding that an artist is just like me. They shit and they wipe their ass and they like fast food or they don't. And just whatever, I'm me. I don't need to go any deeper than that. This is what happens [S2] Sure. [S1] When I get up. And then, but I think my strengths are literally just follow through and being, showing up,
yep,
and giving a shit.
You said
those are my strengths, so maybe that's why I think they're important, right?
You said something when you were going into that about gut, and everybody I've talked to, and I know is true for myself, gut is what got me here. Gut is what gets me through a lot, mm-hmm, and it guides a lot of decisions sometimes. But when did it change from just gut to craft for you?
I think gut and craft are, boy, craft in the world that I live in, there's less craft, I think, in the world that I live in now, because craft to me is more, craft comes into play a little bit because you are creating. Craft is when you create, like a woodsmith or a blacksmith or a songwriter or a guitar player or a luthier, right? That's craft to me. I would have a hard time putting craft into what I do, other than we are creating an event and we create events and you create opportunities. But you know, I think it's experience. I think craft is more experience for me. Is going, you know, there's your gut about what you feel, and the gut comes from all years of experience and knowledge and gathering and talking and communicating and listening, right? But craft in my world, I don't know if craft kind of comes into play so much.
Okay. Well, you're 22 years in.
Is that right?
It may be longer.
It was either 96 or 97. I can't remember. So 96.
I read a bio somewhere.
What day is it? It's Thursday. It's Friday. It's
90. Yeah, it was 96.
It was 96, I think.
Yeah. So that's
2016.
You can't believe everything you read online. But no, that's
it's all it. It's yeah. All true for me. Check my Wikipedia.
But you've done all this. You reinvented yourself a few times. You found new passions. You found things, and you bet on yourself so many different times. What's your mindset for the next 5 years? What are you thinking? Where are you growing? What are you doing?
You know, it's unique. I kind of have two threads of where my career is right now. And honestly, everything I said before was a lie. This time is true. Honest. This time. I don't think about a path. Like I said, I'm kind of in the moment kind of a guy. I try to give everything I can in the moment. Not to say you don't plan for things in the future, but like I said, I've got two different paths right now. One is the management path that I'm on with Joe. I don't anticipate expanding that roster because I've got the crew stuff that takes up so much of my time on the promoter side.
Sure.
But on the promoter side of things, it's so with Joe, I do have some flexibility there. I could sign some more artists. I could do that kind of thing and grow that company on with Jeff from the management side of things, which I don't know if I have a whole lot of interest in growing that company. I love the unique and personal relationship that I have with Joe now on the management side. But on the crew side, the promoter side of things, a little bit of that, we're going to grow that business. We have new, we have, obviously Shiprocked is in its 10th year this year, shiprocked.com. And so that's going to be bigger than ever. It's on the biggest ship we've ever had.
That's awesome.
We're going out of Galveston, Texas this year. So we're upping it to a 5-day cruise rather than a 4-day cruise. And, you know, I think we're looking to expand that company. We have another cruise called the Crimson Tide Cruise, which is the University of Alabama alumni.
That's
cruise.
Awesome.
It's basically a pep rally for 4 days at sea out of Mobile. That's also in 19. So we've got the two events in 19, and we're looking to expand that business. We've got – the great thing is we're all in-house. We've got, you know, 7-8 employees at this point, and we can do everything. We can do fulfillment, credit card processing, the whole thing. So we can do on that side of things as far as the music business is concerned. We can run an event. We can charter a full ship. We can do groups. We can do – anything that would we have the staffing and the people and the finances to do anything we want. So that's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
The next 5 years, man, I'd love to just kind of keep growing Shiprocked. It's a huge brand. It's a huge event. We're looking at taking it to the UK, maybe.
That's awesome.
That would be exciting because there's all kinds of exciting music in the UK. That's a little bit of a breath of fresh air on the rock music side of things. I personally feel like the UK is kind of kicking our asses right now on the music front. There's a lot better music coming out of the UK right now. It's my opinion. I don't know anything. Not to say there's not great music here, but we're thinking about expanding there. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of different avenues we can look forward to in the next.
The cruise world, and I've seen it because we've worked with some other companies and you guys as well on that. That, man, it's boundless on the type of ideas that you can implement, as long as there's a fan base to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, if you can do it on land, you can do it at sea.
Yeah, I love the concept, and it's
unique because it's funny. It's not really different than any. It's not really any different than any festival, other than you're on the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, it's drastically different. You know, yeah. you have bands and music and events. And the thing is, but the interesting thing is about it, it's not a three-day festival where you go and then you go home and then you talk about it. This is something where you're living with people for 4 days. And that experience of meeting those people and forging those relationships and friendships with people, we get 60%+ returns every year. And those people, you know, and primarily because one guest is in Maine and the other one's in Orlando, and when are they going to see him again? Well, I'll see you next year. Yeah. This is when they go, and they it's about friendships. It's not even really about music. It's about the mutual joy of seeing music together. But
that tribe mentality,
totally.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The one of the things we've been doing for each of the interviews is we're still figuring out who's going to be watching. Like, we don't know if it's going to be a lot of artists or industry, entrepreneurs. No clue yet. I hope fucking all of them. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is try to just drop a little bit of knowledge on each one of the subjects that may be impactful to whoever it is that might be watching. So I'll just give you a sentence. You fire off whatever you think.
Okay.
Your truth, whatever that may be. No wrongs.
Can I start everything with...
Honestly?
Honestly.
Yeah. Well, it's mandatory.
To tell you the truth.
I didn't get to the next part. Okay. Yeah. We got an artist, they're grinding, they've got the merch, they're streaming, their social stuff's gone, they've got songs, they're writing every day. They're doing all the things, they just haven't been able to fill the team. Mm-hmm. You know, just climb that ladder, the next rung, not even all the way to the top. Any advice for that?
It's the same advice as the other one, isn't it?
All right, probably.
It's with artistry, it's, I'll hit the 3 points, you know, be patient, show up, and give a shit. With artists, I think you can kind of add to that or maybe tweak it a little bit in that pay attention to the details. The details really do matter. You know, if you're going to go sing at a writer's round and you're trying to be an artist and you're trying to influence people those right way, do something a little different. Take a chance. Because if you're patient and you're not expecting anything right overnight, you can take a chance and take a setback. And then you learn from that. If you're playing it safe and doing the same thing every time, you know, I would love to go to a writer's night in Nashville one time and somebody just drop Jay-Z in the middle of a song. Just do it. Or whatever it may be. Yeah. You know, and I've talked about this probably with you. Hell, man.
Like a reggae devil went down to Georgia.
Or something, you know, something clever. But, you know, I mean, bring a bubble machine. I don't know. just whatever, you know, and that's a grind. I mean, there's no bigger grind than trying to be a recording artist, especially now that the environment has changed.
I heard, I was at an event one night and we were talking, I don't even remember, we were bullshitting about something. And someone says, no, I don't date anybody in the industry, just artist. And I was like, that is the industry.
Who said that? Was it an artist?
No, it was a person.
I don't date anybody but artists?
Yeah, they were saying, I won't date anybody on the music business side, but artists.
What was this person's, what did they do?
They were on the business side.
They only date artists.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to them.
Yeah, I was like, well, it wasn't just that they were dating artists. It was that they were implying that the artists weren't the business.
Oh,
was the point of the conversation.
I got you.
And I was
okay,
like,
sorry.
It's the meat and potatoes of what we do. There is no us without that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Other than the things that you've kind of pointed out, the be patient, all the stuff, what's the most impactful or best advice you think you've ever received? And not that those aren't awesome pieces of advice.
Sure. Man, it's interesting because I don't know if I've ever, and maybe this is something I can work on here in the psychiatrist chair here.
I'll send you
psychiatrist,
the
psychiatrist Tim. I don't know if I've ever gone out and specifically asked for career advice or.
It could even be life, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to kind of be willing to receive it. I guess it goes back to just trying to be a good listener and receiving it that way. But as far as I don't know if I've ever solicited advice other than project specific, like we do. You call somebody and goes, hey, you know, I've never done this sync license before. Tell me about this. Am I on the right track? And you get advice that way, where I'm trying to get advice from people. But big picture career wise, I don't know.
No problem.
I don't have an answer.
Okay. What do you think the secret is? What's the secret? Anybody's trying to become better human, better business person, better artist. I think we've touched on it a lot.
I think it's communication. I think it's real, actual, human communication. I think it's sitting down and talking to people, communicating to people as people, communicating with people as people. And I really think there's only two ways to do that. I think there's the phone, and then there's sitting down like this. I don't think there's, again, I'm the old man here, but zeros and ones are not communication. That's you know, that's a tool that we have to communicate, but it is not communication. You know, a hammer is a tool we use to pound in a nail, but it is not carpentry, right?
Sure.
So, you know, real communication. Keep that one, by the way. I'm gonna edit that shit right down to that, because that was
yeah.
Whoa. But no, I really believe that. And I think, you know, people gripe on millennials and it's like, whatever. It's not, I don't have any, I don't even know what that even is because I don't pay any attention. But I think what it is that there's a digital disconnect. And I think there's a perception of what things are based on zeros and ones versus what they really are. I don't think the world is anywhere near as bad a place as we think it is. I think there's great people out there. I think there's positivity everywhere you look, but you're bombarded with negativity with zeros and ones. So I think the one piece of advice I would get is make real friends in real human ways and do real communication. And, you know, I'm working every day going, and I'm like anybody else. I'll send 100 emails a day when I'm busy or more and field twice as many. But when I need to really figure out what's going on, you just pick up the phone, you call somebody. And a lot of people are afraid to do that, young and old. I don't think that has anything to do with being a millennial or octogenarian. Some people, they understand the convenience of email and digital communication, and that's what they use. And I'll stop people, even in the world that I'm living in, going, hey, hold on. You don't know if they mean that way.
Sure.
You can't. I can take this 15 different ways. And you don't even know that person that well. Again, relationships. You don't know this person. You've emailed them four times, and the first email was a cold email to you. So why don't you hop on the phone and build a relationship, a human relationship? Because that'll never change, I don't think. And I think the people that foster those relationships and develop those and focus on those are more likely to succeed than those who don't. And it goes back to – that's the communication part. And then I also think the underlying communication part is the listening. Is, you know, communication is you and me having a conversation, but the more important part of the conversation is listening and trying to figure out what that person is saying, you know, and it's really hard for most, I think it's impossible for humans to communicate with zeros and ones. That's how computers communicate. We're not computers, no, you know, newsflash.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, really, I do, and I think right now is the perfect time for that message to get out there. And I think the younger folks who are getting into the business, and hell, I'm a younger folk too. I'm only, you know, I'm 23. But, you know, the younger folks getting out of college and trying to get into this crazy business, that will put them a leg up, no doubt.
Sure.
If they're willing to go and meet with an old fart like me and go, hey, tell me about that, you're like, you're sharp. Because guess what, man? There's no 30-year-old or 25-year-old in the music business has given anybody a job. You know, it's the guy who's my age, soon to be your age, who are going to say you're hired, and those people don't want to Snapchat you, man. They don't. They don't give a shit about your Snapchat. So what do you do? And that pendulum may switch.
Sure,
it may. But that's the reality of where we live right now. The guy or gal that's hiring you doesn't want to email you. They want to get to know you, and the only way to get to know you is to sit down and talk. So I think younger people getting in the music industry right now, or any industry, it's important to, if you got to go interview with somebody or you're looking to get an angle, or learn something from somebody, you're not going to learn something from somebody your own age, for the most part. I mean, how many Zuckerbergs are there, right?
Yeah.
You're going to learn from people who've been doing it for 20 years. Those people don't want to text you, man. They don't want. They know that texting is not talking. You know, so it's. I think it's super important. If you grasp that concept early, and embrace it, and know that technology is a tool, that I think they get ahead quick. I know they do in my world.
Sure.
You know, the people that show up that we hire for our events are people that you call and talk to and have really good personalities and can engage with people, you know, in a real way. Like, you know, I got 3,000 people coming on this ship. They're not walking onto a virtual ship, man. They're physically walking, not yeah. Minecraft. They're physically walking, and you physically have to greet them and say, "How are you? Can I help you? How was your experience?" The restrooms are over there. Dining room is up here.
Sure.
The show starts at, right? You have to get good at that, man. That person walking up, you can't go, "What's your cell number?" And they're going to be like, "What?" And you know what? As a consumer, a young person as a consumer, they expect that. They go into the Apple store. They want the person to go, "Hey, this thing goes this and this." And then they expect that too.
Sure.
Right? So everybody expects that. So let's do it. Let's give it to them. You know, so.
Great advice.
I don't know if it is.
Well, you heard it here, guys. I think it's perfect. be patient. Care. Show up. Don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
And build real relationships and communicate.
Yeah.
Till next time, guys. Thanks.
There you go.
Thanks, appreciate it, brother.
You got it, man.
Love you, man.
Pleasure to be here. Yep. Love you, too. For anybody that's trying to follow a dream, no holding back, you'll get it by any means. Idols on a wall, you cut out from magazines. Full of self-esteem, nobody can intervene. Ready for the shine, you never need in the shade. This is for the boss that never gave you a raise. This is for every time you ever tried to create, and no one understood, they never gave you the space. Walking up to you, they trying to give you the crown. Look into your eyes and tell you you one of us. Every time you turn around and face the crowd, be ready cause your time is now.